Today is February 13th, 2019, and this is episode number 501 of the Apple Context Machine. Now, that's a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Brian Chaffin, editor-in-chief of the Mac Observer. Get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast. You can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you would like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note over at macobserver.com/contextmachine. That's a new URL we have. That'll take you straight to the Facebook group that we have, the Facebook group for the Context Machine. Now, ladies and gentlemen, from the far-off reaches of a distant time and place, I present to you a creature rare, seldom seen, and almost never heard. This most elusive species of human is sure to calm your nerves with graciousness and aplomb. Threatened by the demonic forces of uncivility and rancor that permeates our modern society, the gentleman before you is nevertheless the real deal, genuine, bona fide even. And by that I mean my friend, peer, and a man I am lucky enough to call employ, John Martellaro.
Bona fide.
Bona fide that, even.
That'd be me.
Bona fide. A bona fide gentleman. Or as the ever delightful Holly Hunter would say, bona fides.
Or bona fides. Holly Hunter. Oh, yeah. I like her.
Yeah. In Oh, Brother, Where Art Thou? I think she said bona fides. Bona fides. I can't remember. Anyway, it was very funny. Very funny. Great movie. Have you seen that movie?
I don't think so. I think the one I know her from is the Forest Fire movie where she played a pilot.
Yeah, she's done a bunch of other movies, too.
With John Goodman. And forget the name of it.
Oh, Brother, Where Art Thou is a fantastic one.
Mm.
It's great.
Cool.
You should watch it. You'll be bummed.
Isn't George Clooney in that?
He is.
I may have seen it a long time ago and then forgotten that I saw it.
What? I take back everything I said. I take it all back.
No. I'll do a Jeremy Clarkson. No.
Oh, don't do a Jeremy Clarkson. That guy.
I've been watching Grand Tour. Season 3 is in full swing.
Yeah, I know, but he's
weird. It's true, but it's a good show.
It's a good show, and he just turns out to be an awful human being. And that's problematic.
Well, we all have our issues.
Yeah.
I'm bona fide.
We are not. Anyway, all right. Derail there. So we are today. We do have three topics, and I will be interested to see if we can get to all three of them. And we're going to start off with, John, a topic that you're bringing to the table.
Okay.
And that's, I don't know, I called it, I'm not sure if this is how you'd put it, but Apple and infrastructure.
Infrastructure roadmap. Yeah, I was thinking before the show started, when I was having breakfast, about the past history of Apple and how it's always been easy to see the mental gears of Apple churning. You know, it started off, in my mind, with the digital hub. And those of us who were using Macs in those days could just see how Apple was thinking about how to integrate our phones and our music and our cameras and our devices into a digital hub called the Macintosh. And when Apple did things and said things and planned things and made acquisitions and announcements, you could kind of see the plan falling into place. And then later, because of the digital hub, we had iTunes. And iTunes became the repository for our music and our movies and Apple University and for podcasts and for various things. And so we kind of circled around iTunes as the center of our life and the things that Apple did, the presentations that Steve
center
Jobs
center of our gave. Digital lives.
Yeah, and the presentations that Steve Jobs gave were in the context of that. I remember seeing him give a presentation of iMovie one time with kids on the beach and family. having great memories, and he's talking about how this is why we do what we do. You could always see the mental gears of Apple churning, and that dictated how it approached life and business and its customers. And now that's been supplanted by iCloud. iCloud is, again, sort of the center of our digital life, where everything is synced through there, our calendars, our contacts.
Well, hold on. You're positing that the Mac as the center of our digital lives has been supplanted by iCloud as the center of our digital lives.
Yes.
Is that what you're saying?
Clarification, okay. Yes. So Apple continues to tie together our lives and its infrastructure with a plan. That said, I was thinking also in context about Amazon's acquisition of Aero. And I got into a tweet storm with a few people, Renee Ritchie and some other people, the other day about that as soon as the news came out. And a fellow who I now follow on Twitter, Matt Castellanelli, sent out a very interesting tweet. He had a list, and the list was like this: AWS, that's Amazon Web Services.
That's their mostly enterprise-oriented server infrastructure.
Cloud storage, right.
No, it's not. So, well, hold on. AWS is cloud services, not cloud storage. May be part of AWS.
Part of it, right.
But AWS is really aimed at other people who do not want to manage their own servers.
Exactly. Okay. I was being too specific. So the list goes like this: AWS, the reservoir; Aero, the spigot; Alexa Echo, the container; next, the pipes; Amazon is an ISP. And so if you want to read that into it, you can see how Amazon is putting a consistent plan into place to seize control of internet infrastructure and our services in a very physical way, whereas Apple has done it in a very software-oriented way, and some would say not that great a way in terms of iCloud. So when Amazon announced that it had reached agreement to acquire Aero, which was talked about on TDO previously.
I think, by the way, it's Eero.
Okay. Okay,
just,
sorry.
You know, mostly pedantic. It's Eero. That sort of my thing here. Eero, yeah.
That's Eero.
It's E-R-O.
So I started thinking about consciousness of a plan. You see, Amazon.
Oh, hold on. I'm sorry. We should explain. Eero is the mesh network router / mesh network a company. So they make things like airport used to be, but was for the more modern mesh approach of providing Wi-Fi services within a building, a home, or, you know, that sort of thing.
And let's put that into context, because Apple got out of the Wi-Fi router business
inexplicably
18 months ago. And
No. Apple got out of the business 2.5 years ago or 3 years ago, and they finally stopped selling what they were making a year and a half ago.
All right. Yeah.
I'm cranky about it, man. Apple doing less and less with more and more.
Yeah, and another tweet that came up during that process was from somebody else, I don't remember who, was Apple has to ask itself the question, if Apple is a champion of our privacy and security, then it should also be a champion of our hardware and services that connect us to the internet.
Yeah. Right?
Yep. Duh. And so I started thinking about, do we see that strategy from Apple? I mean, if Apple had jumped on this and bought a router company after Apple decided to get out of the business, because perhaps, as Dave Hamilton says, they didn't want to have the expertise, but still saw a strategic necessity.
Yeah, and it's, you know, impossible for a company like Apple to hire expertise.
Well, yeah,
you can't,
yeah,
you know,
aside from that.
You can't expect Apple to actually hire some freaking people to do some stuff, can you now?
There's lots of people out there who'd be jumping at the opportunity to work for Apple and to do this. So my argument in contradiction to Dave is, yeah, Apple could do this, and I said this on TDO. But given that Apple perhaps wasn't able to do it, didn't have the access to the personnel they needed or the leadership, they could solve that problem, as many companies do, by acquiring the expertise when they need it. They do that all the time through acquisitions and mergers. So if Apple's strategy were to have top-to-bottom control of our privacy and security, you would think that Apple would say, well, since we're not going to have our own in-house group for this process, we should acquire that expertise on the outside. And Apple might have acquired Aero or another company who's doing something similar. But no. And so the contrast in my mind was, you see the plan that Amazon is executing, but you don't see the gears of Apple turning in an obvious architectural kind of way. Somebody might argue that that's in a different area. They've made some strategic acquisitions in augmented reality.
And yeah, no, we're gonna get to that though.
Yeah,
that's more topic too. So let me back up.
That was the thought I had. I didn't see the consciousness of Apple's explicit roadmap and the wheels churning that telegraph to us what Apple's up to, what it wants to achieve, and how we should put what they do in context.
Let me sort of make this a little more pointed to. Phil Schiller in particular has told us that Apple wants to be at the center of where we live our lives. Do you remember him saying that?
I don't remember those specific words, but I was thinking in parallel about how he said that Apple, the education is in Apple's DNA, and turned out not to be the case.
Yeah, right. Right. Yeah. Apple, don't even give me started on Apple education. So, yeah, he said this. I want to say this is one of those things where time sort of compresses, and I could be mistaken. I want to say it was about a year and a half ago, maybe 2 years ago, maybe even a year ago, where he said that Apple wants to be basically like if there is a place that we spend lots of time, Apple wants to be there. And I think you could apply that to things like watching TV, listening to music, you know, interacting with social media, all those kinds of things. And to your point, it seems like providing the infrastructure for us to get onto the internet fits within that definition.
Exactly.
And should be a thing that Apple is offering us. Like if, and put another way, like it's interesting to me that Amazon does seem to be putting all of these pieces into place to like the idea. It would not surprise, now that it's been said to me, it would not surprise me for even a microsecond if Amazon were to launch its own ISP. It makes a ton of sense to, you know, to buy an ISP, do something so that they're actually providing the pipes to people. Now, Google kind of did the same thing. Like a big part of Google's business model has been to make it easier for us to get online, easier for us to find information, because the more of that we do, the faster we can do that, the easier it is, the less friction there is for us to do things online, the more value that they end up being able to generate by, you know, through their various advertising services.
Are you talking about their fiber experiments?
Well, but not just fiber. They provided Chrome OS. They provided the Chrome browser, which was a very, very, you know, much faster than other browsers when it came out. They, of course, were working on fiber. They seem to have kind of stalled on that, which is a tremendous, tremendous shame to me. There have been other things that they can do that I'm not thinking of off the top of my head, but I know that they're back there somewhere. To make it easier for us to do stuff online. And it's in their best interest. I mean, don't get me wrong. There's side benefits, like, you know, you're doing stuff in Chrome browser, they're better able to track what you're doing and add that to your advertising profile. If they're providing your ISP services, they can obviously add even more to your advertising profile, right? Because now they know everything you're doing. But that's sort of like the side benefit. They want people to be able to get online, be able to do stuff fast, because the more you do, the more information they have and the more advertising they can sell. And Amazon has a vested interest in making it easier for you to do more and more online too, because that means you might spend more of your time shopping online. And where are you going to be do your shopping? Probably on Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that all makes sense. And then Apple, in the meanwhile, iCloud does some things amazingly well, and then just other things like ridiculously but poorly. Do you agree with that?
I agree.
Like there are some aspects of iCloud that are just amazing. Like Keychain, for instance. And its iCloud syncing has always, like, I don't think there's ever been a problem with that. Right? And they were doing that long before anyone else was syncing that sort of information. And they were doing it securely. And to our knowledge, there's never been a data breach or other serious security compromise. Well, that's a huge feather in Apple's cap.
I did read about a Keychain exploit recently, but I don't know that exploited.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, I don't think there was an exploit in the wild.
It's not in the wild, yeah.
Yeah, there was a security
But you're right. I talked to Rich Vogel about iCloud Keychain, and he said he's a security expert, and he said iCloud Keychain is very good and very secure.
And there are other things that Apple does really, really well in terms of iCloud services, and some things that it doesn't do very well. For instance, Apple's storage that they give you is ridiculous. It's bad. It's like not
it
much.
It hasn't grown with the times. I think it started off at 5 gigabytes when it first launched, and I forget what year, but it was maybe a decade ago. And it hasn't changed since.
Yeah, I don't think it was a decade ago.
I'm trying to remember.
But it's been a while. And yeah, it hasn't changed. And it hasn't grown. And then, of course, Apple has actually pulled some services, products off the market, for instance, Airport, which we've already lamented. So, it does.
I guess you can use that reason for displays too, because all of our access to the internet is through display devices, right?
Mm-hmm.
Our phones, our iPads, our displays, what we visualize, what the internet in a very video-oriented, text-oriented, every way you can think of. You can't access the internet through motion sensors or through tactile events, except for some exotic devices that are being experimented with that we don't need to talk about. But you would think that Apple would be one of the companies that wants to seize our display experience, and that would be through our computer displays, our Macs, and through connections to the Apple TV.
So you're referring, of course, to having gotten out of the display business, despite the fact that the iMac 5K has one of the best displays on the market, and yet Apple stopped making standalone displays. Like, what? Come on, man! What is that about? What is that about? Why?
And then we have the gaps in the release of the various Macs. So we're still waiting for a coffee like iMac. 20 months after the Kaby Lake Mac iMacs came out in the summer of 2017.
No, but it's cool, bro, because you can still pay the same price for that old technology.
Right. So instead of seeing. If I could reiterate, instead of seeing a coherent picture of an Apple's mental gears ticking away and how they're thoughtfully rolling out the strategy and articulating it to us, what we see is these gaps and mysteries and opacity in Apple's planning and presentation to us of their strategy.
And there's a reason for that, I think.
Am I feelings telegraphing okay to you?
Yeah, for sure. And I think the reason for this, I think, is that under Tim Cook, Apple's vision has shifted towards the long term. And that Apple's executive team is focused on all these products that have not been announced or released. You know, the AR stuff, car stuff, the health, more health stuff than we've already seen, the things like the non-invasive glucose monitoring, those kinds of projects and products and, you know, massively disruptive things that are going to radically transform Apple far away from being a computer company. I mean, that transformation is certainly well underway, but, you know, taking us even further from Apple being a computer company, I think that that's what Apple's focus is. And it's those short-term aspects, short-term vision. And that short-term vision is what's, you know, that's part of this, John.
You know what Steve, that tells me?
What?
It tells me that the executive team is not delegating.
Yes.
It tells me that the power is concentrated at the top, and the power only has the bandwidth to think about long-range, exciting future projects. And the day-to-day operation of the company, the day-to-day strategy and tactics of the company, the current product design and strategy is getting short shrift.
Yes, I agree with that. And what John Keat... It's funny how often John Key gets a mention on one of my shows, at least, is that Apple needs to hire. He wrote a piece for us several years ago saying that Apple needs to hire a B team to take care of Macs. Right. If the A team can't do all the new stuff, he didn't quite put it this way, but I'm going to put words in his mouth because he's not here to defend himself. If the A team can't keep its eye on both new stuff and old stuff, then Apple needs to hire a B team to take care of and iterate the old stuff.
But the executive team has never trusted a B team to manifest Apple's vision and strategy and to be
right.
Wise in its presentation of Apple culture.
That worked when Apple was a much smaller company and when Apple's vision was much more immediate. So one of the things I was going to say,
surviving was the frame thing.
Even after that, once Apple started accumulating billions of dollars, the thing is that, you know, Steve Jobs certainly had vision and vision beyond today and possibly even vision beyond tomorrow. But he was hyper fixated and focused on today also. So whatever it is that Apple was doing today to address the needs of tomorrow, he was hyper focused on that thing that they were doing today.
Yeah, I've heard stories about Steve looking at a prototype of an iPhone and staring at it intently and seeing pixels out of place and being upset and having them go back to the drawing board to get their display down pat, perfect.
And that's not what Tim Cook does, rightly or wrongly. You know, I've made the argument that Tim Cook is the right person to transition Apple into the Apple of tomorrow. And I've also said that those of us who are fans of what the company does today may not like that result. But from a company stewardship standpoint, that he was the right person to do that. And I stand by that assessment. I just wish we could get that today stuff still.
I know how I would do it. And I'm just an amateur at this. I work for Apple. That makes me an expert on all things, right?
Yeah, of course.
I know how I would do it.
This works. By the way, I have not worked at Apple, and I also am an expert on all this stuff. So, so go ahead.
I would transition somebody into Phil Schiller's job as Senior Vice President of Product Marketing, an insider, And I would change Phil Schiller's job description to the chief roadmap officer.
You need a product guy. And by product guy, I don't mean necessarily a male. You need a product person in charge of that roadmap. I don't know if Phil is a product person.
He's pretty deep in ways that he doesn't always show.
I know that. I think that Phil Schiller is probably the most underrated top Apple executive. I think that people like see his presentation and just see this affable fellow.
I've seen him in meetings. He knows his. If I could say that.
No, you can't. You can't say that. This is a family-friendly show.
He knows his stuff.
All that stuff I said at the beginning of the show about you being a gentleman, it's all gone. It's wiped away. Wiped away. You're going to make
me
do an
edit.
I'm a
bona fide fellow. Oh,
no longer. No longer, sir.
Phil Schiller knows his stuff. He's very deep and he understands the
products. Absolutely. He does.
He has a vision for how products should evolve.
I also think that Phil Schiller has never gotten enough credit for Apple's marketing. Let me rephrase that. That Steve Jobs got all of Phil Schiller's credit when it comes to marketing. And I think that Phil Schiller is probably a badass. But I don't know that he's a product person.
Or are you talking about military badass, somebody who's got made of steel and can make the tough decisions, even though it annoys people?
I was using it highly competent, very capable, someone who can really get stuff done, but is highly competent and capable. That's how I was using it.
Yeah, that's the definition of a military colonel. You don't make 06 in the military unless you are characterized as a real
fun fact.
Tough person.
Fun fact: I used to tell people that you were a colonel in the Air Force because I thought I mistakenly thought that
no, you I was a captain.
No.
O3.
I know that now. I know that now, but for years I would tell, oh yeah, John Martellar, he was a colonel in the Air Force.
Oh well, thank you.
Yeah. You know why? It's because you're a badass.
Well, you have to be a cast iron blank blankety blank to make colonel, because colonels are tasked with getting the job done, even if you step on people's toes.
What are you saying that they're the sergeants of the commissioned officer ranks?
Yeah, they're the ones who are tasked with. They're the squadron commanders. They're the.
I've never thought of it that way.
They're the ones who are in the thick of it. They're the ones who get the stuff done. Everybody else is a lieutenant to them. And delegated with responsibilities, but the O6s run the military because they're the ones who have the authority. You get into the admirals and the generals, and that's even higher level stuff. That's more of high level executive strategic planning. But colonels can be very technical. Many of them have PhDs in the technical areas, and I've never met an O6 in the military who wasn't really, really gritty and hard nosed and tough because they have to be. They're the ones who do. Those are the ones who make things happen.
So you're saying Phil Schiller is
return from subroutine. I'm saying, yeah, Phil Schiller is the O6 of Apple. He's the colonel.
All right.
But getting back to the original discussion, I would like to see Apple maintain its secrecy, but without the opacity of what it's trying to achieve for us, besides privacy and security.
Apple used to do that by doing, by executing. Apple's roadmap would be revealed through its new products. It's just that Apple doesn't release new products anymore.
Right. And by not presenting to us its mental thoughts and architecture and planning and vision, it absolves Apple from having to perform in many ways, like release a new Mac every year of each model. It absolves Apple from being held responsible for anything because they can say, well, we never planned that. We never told you we were going to do that. That's getting a little tiresome.
Yeah, it is getting a little tiresome. All right, well, let's pivot there. Let's pivot there to – actually, let's go to topic three. because topic three is kind of related to topic one. And that's something I euphemistically called Apple Car and AR and stuff. And we were talking about this when we were putting together our topics for the show, and you said a few things that I immediately wanted to call balderdash on, so I figured that would be a great topic for us.
Well, you provided some good background because you are the car expert. I am only the amateur observer of Apple cars.
We are in trouble if I'm the car expert.
Well, I subscribe to Car and Driver. That makes me an expert.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah. You're an expert. Yeah, you're an expert in all things car and driver and Apple. And Apple, because you used to work there.
Well, what started this discussion was you and I were chatting before the show about roadmaps and synergistic planning and how things fit together in the context of infrastructure. And I was commenting about how I saw a connection between Apple's interest in AR and its autonomous car project, and how it would be possible in a ride-sharing mode for passengers to be able to see things outside the car that would be of interest to them and possibly part of navigation. I mean, we tend to think of autonomous cars as point-to-point travel and generally disregard joyrides and sightseeing and vacationing. It's very specific. And if you were on a trip that was not as well organized as, say, you know, take me to the grocery store and bring me home, you might be interested in seeing things on the outside that could be presented through augmented reality. And Jeff Gammon and I have explored this about being able to see outside the car in amazing ways, other than just peering through glass windows.
All right. That's all fine and dandy. And the thing is there is a role to play with AR in terms of car navigation for cars with drivers, right? With autonomous vehicles, you do not need navigation information in a heads-up display.
No, but you might want sightseeing information.
Yeah, but I would rather have sightseeing information to myself, tailored to me. And I can't, like, if you and I and Jeff Gammon and Dave Hamilton are all taking a company trip somewhere, right? We're all going to have different things that we're going to want to see. That sort of AR makes a lot more sense with some kind of glasses or contact lenses eventually, and eventually brain implants. But, you know, whatever, that's far off in the future. So, and I don't think that sort of AR and cars is where Apple is going to be. What you're talking about, that doesn't make sense to me to be where they're focused.
I just don't have a keen sense about riding in an autonomous ride-sharing vehicle and having to put glasses on.
Well, you'd have your glasses on anyway.
It doesn't seem like...
You have your glasses on anyway.
Yeah, but it doesn't ring true to me. Maybe it does for you.
Well, the way you said it, no. The idea of, okay, I'm going to take my... Okay, all right, let's back up. So where the ride-sharing and Apple Car thing is coming in is from that interview that Tim Cook gave probably a couple of years ago now. Again, time sort of compresses and with me. He said that there are three interesting things happening in the world of automobiles. One is electric vehicles. Two
check.
Is autonomous vehicles.
Check.
Three is ride sharing. And he said that he thinks being at the juncture of those three things is an interesting place to be. Kind of in the same way that he said that the wrist was an interesting place for wearable computing before Apple Watch came out. He also said that the face is not the place for wearable computing. And yet Apple is doing AR, and it turns out, I would like to point out, and I know that my longtime listeners have heard me say this before, it turns out your eyeballs are on your face, And that makes the face an ideal place for wearable computing if it's going to be in using your eyeballs. Right? Walking around. There's a walking around with our iPhones held up in front of our face. John, I don't think I said this with you. I've certainly said this recently on the show. Walking around holding up our iPhones in front of us and looking at the world through our iPhones is not a long-term vision.
No, it's not.
It's that is an idiotic vision, and it's a terrible way to live your life. And I don't think for a second that that is Apple's aim.
Well, maybe I'm thinking the wrong way about AR glasses. You know, I have several different pairs of glasses. Let me pontificate for a second. I have computer glasses. Mm-hmm. They weigh less than an ounce. Mm-hmm. And they're specially designed for at arm's length. Mm-hmm. And then I have Polaroid prescription progressive sunglasses for driving and skiing and outdoors. And then I have my regular progressives for indoors. Mm-hmm. And
why don't you use your progressives for your computer?
The progressives can be used for the computer, but the computer glasses can't be used for long distance because they top out at about 2 or 3 meters.
Why would you just wear your progressives? You're making my point.
Well, progressives are designed to work at many different distances reasonably well, whereas computer glasses are designed to work perfectly at 24 inches.
Yeah, okay, all right, go ahead. Yeah, I'm actually probably right. Projecting onto you the fact that I am farsighted. So yeah. I only wear my glasses when I'm reading or at a computer. And yeah, so anyway, go ahead.
So when I think about AR glasses, I think about the prescription problem, because heretofore the technologies have always involved a mild condescension to the viewer's optical needs in terms of prescription glasses. But then suddenly I had a thought, suppose AR glasses were not only AR glasses, but were top of the line, very technologically advanced glasses that could change their index of refraction through the electrical current applied to them. There are crystals that can do that and can become opaque when you need them outdoors and can be polarized or not polarized, depending on whether you're looking at your car instrument panel or not, because some car displays don't show up well in polarized sunglasses. They're getting better. Companies are getting better at that. So all of a sudden it occurred to me that maybe AR glasses could be combined with the best of the technology, where you would sit at the computer and you would feed the prescription into these glasses, and they would become your ultimate one pair of glasses that you would only ever need, and be tuned to the conditions, close or far, bright or dim, and be AR.
Man, that
wouldn't that be cool?
Yes. I suspect that particular path, however, the same path that would get us there actually takes us to contact lenses. All right, let me back up again, because I think that goodness gracious, there is the display technology required to make AR glasses, right? And, you know, Google was in this business and got out of this business.
Mm-hmm.
Google Glass. And Apple is supposedly working on what has always been called a goggle project somewhere in Asia. Right. And I don't believe for a second they're goggles, because again,
I think it's misdirection.
Yeah, I think it's misdirection.
I think it's just a placeholder. Yeah.
Because viewing the world through goggles, goggles make sense for VR. Goggles do not make sense for AR.
Right.
Right. And there's the display aspect of those kinds of glasses or even goggles. And then there's the prescription glasses component and changing the prescription glasses. I would be flabbergasted if Apple could introduce anything like that. I think it makes a lot more sense.
Engineering goal, if I were working for Apple, that'd be the long range goal.
Long range goal for sure, but we can't. They're not gonna wait until that. I think instead, what they would do is have a prescription glass, non-prescription vision kind of glass for AR, and then also be able to use AR with prescription glass, prescription lenses too. It seems like you have to have both of those to make a real splash. But I don't think for a second that Apple's going to be able to come to market with a variable prescription. Well,
there's a broad audience of people who are young and have great accommodation, and they can focus close and near with the flexibility of their cornea. So not a problem in the initial phases.
Yeah. Well, so for those folks who don't need glasses, just lenses that are displays that don't affect your vision, don't affect the accuracy of your vision.
Right. Right.
Okay. All right. So we're being on the same page?
Being older. Yeah, exactly. Being older, I was thinking in terms of prescription glasses, but and there are lots of young people who have astigmatism and need correction as well. But for starters, Apple would still have a broad market of people who don't need corrected vision, who would be happy to wear AR glasses that were light and handy.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. So I do think we know that Apple is still working on its car, on its autonomous vehicle technology. We know this. They're seen on the road all the time here in Silicon Valley. We know that what we don't know is what Apple's going to do with it. Is Apple going to, you know, make its own car? I thought so once upon a time, but since then, again, as I've noted, I met someone working on that project. But Apple has since fired or redeployed all those people. Right? Bob Mansfield radically scaled down the number of people and the ambition of Project Titan, and their initial focus turned, or their primary and perhaps only focus became, can we make a driverless car technology? Can we make an autonomous vehicle software?
What might that be a sign of, laying off people? Maybe Apple had plans to manufacture its own autonomous ride-sharing vehicle, and maybe they struck a partnership with somebody else.
If Apple had struck a partnership, we would know about it. No way a partnership like that is going to stay secret. Zero chance.
I thought I read that Apple was working with Volkswagen. But I don't remember for sure.
There's been lots of rumors that Apple's talking to different car companies about a wide variety. I mean, we don't know about what, but Apple, there is, I personally will describe zero chance of Apple having reached a partnership with anyone for anything along those lines.
But if they had reached a partnership with somebody else to build the vehicle, there might be industrial design and manufacturing people who would be extraneous and would be laid off.
Yeah. I think the people that were let go from Project Titan were really the people that were on the physical car side of things.
Yeah.
And what Bob Mansfield what we understand from leaks is that Bob Mansfield's mandate became, can we make autonomous vehicle software?
Right, because if Apple, as I said before, if Apple were thinking about manufacturing tens of thousands of autonomous vehicles, they would have to have factory space with manufacturing robots to build those vehicles that could not be overlooked. Somehow, some way, that information would leak either in the leasing of the building or the ordering of the manufacturing robots or something along those lines. Yeah, but we haven't heard anything about that.
I think even if Apple had made a manufacturing deal with an outsourcer, that we would have heard that. Because again, that's going to involve lots of people, lots of fingers, lots of eyeballs involved in the project that we have seen so far that sort of thing leaks. But
it could be that the manufacturer said, when you demonstrate to us that you've got an autonomous system that works to our satisfaction, we'll commit to making the vehicle for you.
That's not, we're talking about Apple here. Apple would be saying, we've got an autonomous vehicle. When you demonstrate that you can make the car that we want, we'll hire you.
That's traditional Apple arrogance, but I like to think they wouldn't try that in this day and age because they're not an expert on Apple's not an expert on cars. Apple has zero experience in car manufacturing.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean they're not going to bring their customary arrogance and control freakish nature to the project.
Yeah. Look how far they got Eddie Q in the TV industry.
That you're just confusing the you're just confusing the situation with facts. But nonetheless, I can't imagine that Apple is ready to go with its car. What I do think that Apple is eventually going to do, I don't think Apple's going to be selling us a car. I don't think you and I are going to be able to go down to a showroom or, you know, online or to an Apple store and pick out our Apple car. Instead, right. I think that that Apple sees that individual car ownership is going to very quickly become a relic of the past. It makes so much more sense for automobiles to be shared resources.
A relic of the past as mainstream, but it won't disappear completely.
No. The rich. Corporations, stubborn people who don't want to give up, you know, the freedom of having their own car, which, you know, I totally get. There will still be people who own it, but as we march forward through time, it makes more sense for automobiles to be a shared resource, and it makes ever more sense, ever more and more and more sense for those cars to be a shared resource from a very centralized way.
Yeah, I agree with that. All you need to do is go out on the highway in your local town and discover that probably more than half of the people who are out on the highway are not really qualified to have a driver's license anyway.
Well, it's not just that. It's you know, this is, Dave Hamilton is the first one to point this out. The sheer amount of space that we dedicate as human beings, especially in the West, to storing cars that aren't being used is, we take it for granted because it's just how we live, but it's an astounding waste. It's an astounding waste. I'm renting a place here in Silicon Valley. I'm lucky enough to have a garage. Two people could live in my garage happily, like in that space. You know, I mean, and just the idea of cars being stored and not used is ridiculous when you think about resource management. If a car exists, it should be on the road. And if it's on the road, it should have people in it or be carrying things.
That's a very analytical, intellectual, technical discussion of the situation, but it does tend to overlook the emotional and romantic side of the freedom of the road, which a lot of people cling to.
For those of us who are older, yes.
Yes.
Young people couldn't care less. Like, right, there's this epidemic of young people not even getting driver's licenses.
I heard about that.
Which is weird to you and me. I love my car. I love being able to just get in my car and go somewhere. And I love the idea of taking a road trip And I am absolutely married to that, to the idealized and romanticized things that you just talked about.
And we'll hang on to that. And the car and driver will still survive, and we'll cling to it like many people cling to vinyl records. It'll be a romantic notion of the past that many people will be able to indulge in, but it won't be mainstream anymore. I agree.
Yeah, and it's only a matter of time. And the first step of that will be ride sharing companies maintaining disparate fleets. But eventually I would like to see, even if it's different companies owning those fleets, I would like to see them all answering to a central AI managing all the traffic and managing and predicting all of the needs.
Like, it reminds me, that brings up a good point, a really good point. When John Glenn was asked about his first Mercury flight into space, the first man to orbit the Earth in 1963. He said, it gives me pause to think about how every part on this Atlas missile was supplied by the lowest bidder to the military, to the government.
Yeah.
Apple's got to sell these ride-sharing cars. they've got to assemble a system that's quality and reliable and safe.
No, Apple's going to maintain its own. I think Apple's going to maintain its own fleet. I think it's going to. I think Apple's going to be in competition with Uber and Lyft
I think that's a good idea, Didi. because they'll be in competition with other companies to provide these vehicles to people who maintain the fleets. And if they don't go into competition on their own, they'll never be able to compete because of the quality and the price of these vehicles. So, yeah, you're right. And they better plan on putting everybody else out of business.
I don't think Apple could put
everybody. I'm thinking about the Uber accident with the bicyclist in Arizona. You know, eventually statistics will be kept. One of these days in the September 2027 issue of Car and Driver, there will be a list of companies that provide ride sharing and the number of accidents and deaths according from each maker.
I think that we will probably get to a near accident free expectation and reality. In what seems like today a very short period of time.
I don't believe we'll get to the accident-free point. I think we'll get to the point of acceptable injuries like now. I mean, you know, 50,000 people a year die of alcohol-related injuries. I mean, we accept that in our society. We try to control it and we pass laws, but it's out of our total control as a culture. There will be deaths in these vehicles and they'll be analyzed and scrutinized. And the question is, how many do we tolerate and which companies are going to take
it? I think that we're going to have our first year without an autonomous vehicle fatality sooner than we may think. Right? The headline will be, it's been a year since there was an autonomous vehicle fatality. That year, that headline will be sooner than we think. I'm not saying it's going to be tomorrow.
Well, it's sort of like the airlines. It's been, I don't remember the numbers exactly, but I think it's been quite a while since we've had a major airline crash in the United States.
In the United States, yeah, but there have been plenty elsewhere.
But then we know that's coming sooner or later. That's going to happen. Somewhere, sometimes, heaven forbid, some airline is going to crash and 112 people are going to die. And we freak out. And it doesn't mean it's an end of airline travel, and it doesn't mean end of safety measures. It just means it's something we learn to live with as part of the technology. It's beyond our absolute control. Same with autonomous cars. It'll be a technology that's almost perfect, but not perfectible. And how our culture and our society deals with those people who do die in autonomous accidents is going to be very interesting to write about and observe.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough. All right. Well, let's jump to the third topic. Now we don't have as much time. We've actually gone over on these two topics, which I kind of thought we might. But you did have. I know you were thinking about what you called Apple's lack of attention to its own enterprise program for the App Store.
One of the things that's always
caught you drinking. Sorry about that.
One of the things that's always bothered me is the apparent laxity of the review process in apps. The reviewers are under a lot of pressure and under a lot of workload to pass these apps. And things get through the cracks. And they've gotten through the cracks apparently even more so through Apple's enterprise program. Andrew Orr wrote an article about this recently.
But hold on. That's because Apple hasn't been directly involved with who gets to sideload apps through these enterprise licenses. Right? Apple's not approving. Like if John Martellaro opens up Martellaro Incorporated and gets licensed for Apple's enterprise API, that allows him so that you can have all of your many corporate minions install the Martellaro Incorporated app onto their smartphones so that you can, you know, do whatever it is that Martellaro Incorporated does. Right? Apple is not involved directly in each of those people being able to install, to sideload, the Martellaro Inc. app. And that's how this problem happened. This isn't an issue of Apple. This isn't an issue of Apple approving all these sideloadings.
Well, maybe I'm reading Andrew's article wrong, but he talks about the screening process for these apps that apparently are already apps that are approved and have certificates and can run. And then corporations are allowed access to augmenting it for business purposes through the enterprise program. And so they're inserting code into apps that already have certificates that are already approved. And enterprise organizations are exploiting that to add features that are bypassing the screening process. That's how I understand it.
Yeah, right. The companies have been using the enterprise program to bypass App Store restrictions and to do things that they couldn't get into the App Store. That's the issue here.
Yeah, and it just makes me a little bit unsettled to find out that Apple has not put the clamps on this and let it slip through.
Right. Apple has been putting the clamps down, but it's been in reaction to news reports. It hasn't been Apple proactively stopping shenanigans. It's been the shenanigans have been reported and then Apple has reacted.
Right. That's another unsettling aspect to it. There's nobody who's looking at how exploits might happen and inculcating that into the design process of their store and their apps. So it's true that in a sufficiently complex technology, people always figure out devious ways to exploit it. But I think Apple needs to spend more time trying to exploit their own software and cut these things off at the pass.
You know what I think, John? You know what I think? I think that people need to do the right thing. I think that people, and by people here, I'm including companies, because it turns out, now this is, I know, a radical suggestion, but it turns out that people make the decisions of corporations. And I know this isn't going to happen, but I am, like, sick to death of people doing whatever it is that they can get away with, as opposed to doing the right thing. Like what Facebook was doing, what Google was doing.
Tell me about it.
What all these companies have been doing to take this enterprise program and turning it into an exploit. Just don't do that. Do the right freaking thing.
Well, anytime you can exploit a technology for the sake of financial gain, there are going to be people who are going to do it because money is a powerful incentive.
Yeah, and shortcuts are, you know, people, gimme. I get that. And I'm not saying that every decision that I've made in my personal life has been the right decision. I'm not saying that I haven't made mistakes. I'm not saying that I haven't pursued shortcuts, because I have. But I do try, especially the older I've gotten, I try to be a good person. And I try to make the right decisions. And we have a dearth of that.
Brian, did I get a pay raise?
No.
Wrong decision.
Give me, no, it's a right decision for me. Give me more traffic.
I'm money, just joking,
that money's got to come from somewhere.
I saw an opportunity, folks, and I just jumped at it.
Yeah, fair enough. I like it. So, and this too comes back to another common refrain that I've been singing, and that's that Mark Zuckerberg does not have the wisdom to wield the power that he has created for himself. I won't even say amassed. I won't say that the power that he's amassed. It's the power that he has created for himself. And, you know, all due respect to his ability to have created that power. That is somewhat astounding. But he has made so many wrong decisions in pursuit of that.
I think that power was handed to him by the naivete and gullibility of a lot of customers who didn't see through or didn't care about what they were giving up when they signed up for a free Facebook account.
No. He did a lot of manipulation to make that happen. Yes, people have willingly handed over way too much to Facebook, but I think that Mark Zuckerberg... I don't think Mark Zuckerberg stumbled into what he was, other than being... Oh, got a siren. I apologize for that. Other than being at the right person at the right place at the right time, right? But the right person is part of that.
Brings up an interesting question for me. Some companies come and go, and some companies last for generations. IBM has been around since the late 19th century. They were founded in, 1890 something?
Something along those lines.
To do the census with punch cards initially, and they grew and grew and grew, and so they've endured. Other companies have built within them the seeds of failure. And it'd be interesting in my mind to see whether Facebook, which is now currently under a lot of oversight and scrutiny, is the kind of company that can survive in the long run.
Yeah, for what it's worth, I think the answer to that is no. I think Facebook is going to be rightfully crushed by regulation.
I think so too.
At least I hope that's the case. If Facebook can survive that much needed regulation, that would actually be a testament to its leadership.
What took the government so long? For years, for maybe 10 years here at the Mac Observer, we were talking about privacy and security and these services and things to watch out for and free services, and you are the product when the service is free, and so on, so on, so on. And then we had all these hacks and data breaches and with Kohl's and Target and all the others. Nothing happened. And all of a sudden, Cambridge Analytica comes along and Facebook, and boom, the whole thing blows up, and now there's intense scrutiny. What took the government so long to notice?
Well, the United States government still hasn't noticed. It's the Europeans that have been leading the way in trying to regulate privacy, and they're doing a very mixed job of that.
Yeah, but at least they got the GDPR.
Yes, and that is an imperfect solution, but they're doing something, and the U.S. has largely not done anything.
But philosophy has been you don't want to get in the way of enterprise and creativity and innovation. Hands off, let these companies prosper, because the business of America is business, as Teddy Roosevelt said. And so there wasn't any intellectual thought or technical insight into what they were permitting and not regulating. I mean, the Securities Exchange Commission and the FDA and the FCC are all remnants of times when there were infractions, either in the drug industry or the meatpacking industry or the sales of stocks. All these regulatory agencies arose, the EPA, in response to real-world situations which had practical impacts on the health and safety of people. But when it comes to the Internet Safety Organization, or whatever you want to call it, the Internet Protection Agency, no show.
Well, you know what's interesting, too, is that there's an element of this laissez-faire approach to tech companies in particular that the government is hating. And governments all around the world are hating, and that's privacy, that's encryption. Mm-hmm. So that's an element where...
We could spend another whole show on that.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. Actually, you know, to your point, we are 4 minutes over already.
But it was so much fun.
It was a ton of fun, and I appreciate you being here.
It was fun, yeah. Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Much appreciated. I always enjoy talking to you, despite it's so ironic that you're the one who makes this edit. John Martello, the gentleman, is the one who makes us edit these shows from profanity slips. It's so ironic. It's you who probably cusses the least of us in outside of our professional.
Well, yeah, but you've known me for 15 years. You know why?
It's true. I have known you even longer than that, man.
Maybe 20.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I was a fan when you were writing for Apple Links.
Yeah. Yeah, cool. Those were the days. Me and John Farr. Yeah.
All right, so here's what I'm going to do. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. Our bandwidth is provided by CacheFly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for TMO. That's all for this week. And once again, thanks, John, for joining me.
My pleasure.
Frickin' Myrtle Oro.